Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Royal Watcher podcast. My name is Saad Salman. I'm the founder and editor of the Royal Watcher, a royal commentator, and a royal contributor for alt.com.
My name is Sam Gillespie. I am the editor of the Beaumont. I have a background in fine jewellery and a long-held fascination with history and royalty.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the Royal Watcher podcast. Today, we're joined by a really special guest. David, why don't you introduce yourself?
So thank you guys so much for welcoming here on your podcast. I've been waiting for this, I must say. My name is David Rat. I'm from Portugal. I have an Instagram profile dedicated to the history of the jewels of the Spanish royal family, which is Spanish Royal Jewels. I'm also a contributor to Saad's great website, The Royal Watcher. And I'm here to share a bit of some insights about the Portuguese royal wedding and the history of the monument and the jewels and everything I can contribute.
And it's a pleasure to have you on today.
Yes, can't wait.
Thank you.
Perfect. So last weekend, we had quite a major royal event in Portugal, the wedding of the Infanta Maria Francesca. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. And yeah. It was at, and I think you'll have to correct us with the pronunciations there, but it was, I think, one of the biggest events we've seen in Portugal in almost a quarter of a century.
Yeah, sure. It was a very big wedding. I must confess that I was not expecting it to be that big and like all the media coverage that we had. And it was the biggest event in 26, 27 years since their parents got married in Lisbon.
Yeah, I think we were discussing this ever since they announced their engagement. And I remember it becoming more and more grand as it was progressing.
Sure, and it was upgraded and upgraded and upgraded, really.
Yeah. So I actually find this a bit kind of refreshing from other kind of reigning families where they just announced something 2 days after the engagement and set in stone, where I think they had a couple of major changes, even like up to a few weeks ago.
Yeah, sure. I think at first they were expecting to get married on the same church where the Infanta's parents got married. That is more or less in the center of the city of Lisbon. So, but then they decided to change to this amazing monument, which is the convent and the palace of Mafra. The parents also confessed on an interview that they wanted to get married in here when they did, but because of the communication between the city and because Mafra is like on the outside of Lisbon, it's like more or less 1 hour by car. So they decided to change and do the ceremony on the church, which is more in the center, so it would be easier for the guests to get around and to arrive at the church and so on. So the Infanta kind of fulfilled the parents' wishes by doing the ceremony here. And I think it's much better for a nappy day like this, as the other church is kind of more dark and old. I think It is better in here in Mafra. It's very light, has a lot of color, and it's very big.
Yes, it seemed like quite a spectacular venue. And could you tell us anything special about the Basilica?
This is kind of like our crown jewel from the Baroque style. It belongs to the UNESCO World Heritage Sites list. They started building it in 1717, our King John V, and it was a way to thank the Virgin and God, because he finally got a child. His wife finally gave him a child, and at first it was supposed to be a small monastery with a few monks, and that was it. But this period of our history in Portugal was very bright, and it kind of coincides with the years where we were very well. We had a lot of gold and diamonds, and our international commercial routes as well were working at full. So there was a lot of money to spend, and the king changed the plans and commissioned this amazing, amazing monument. It was inaugurated in 1730. The library of the palace and the convent is also pretty impressive. It's for me, it's one of the most beautiful we have in the country and in Europe as well. It has more than 300,000 books. Then at the center we have the church, and at each one of the sides we have the king and the queen's chambers that are connected by that huge corridor, and you can also see the sea from all the windows of the palace. It was occupied not all the time, as the court were always moving. By the end of the monarchy, it was used by the royal family to when they went to hunt here, because there is a huge park next to the palace. And our last king, King Manuel II, slept here in Mafra his last night in the country before he left to into exile.
Oh, so there's just a really rich royal history that stretches back centuries.
Yes, and it's one of our biggest and most amazing monuments, I must say.
It's just spectacular. And it's so lovely to see that with this wedding, they were able to continue that link through the royal
Yes,
family.
it was a very nice link.
That's just absolutely spectacular. And I think you're talking about this being one of the kind of main Baroque buildings. We often think about kind of Portuguese royal architecture. A lot of it was demolished in the 1755 earthquake in Lisbon. And so this is one of those predating examples and would be an example of how kind of spectacular some of those buildings in Lisbon must have been.
Yes, indeed. We had a pretty amazing palace as well in the center of Lisbon that was completely destroyed during the earthquake, or and after that, the remainings were demolished. And we kind of have this jewel in here that, thank God, stayed like they designed it.
No, that's just amazing. So I think let's kind of start off by looking at the pre-wedding dinner, which was held at the home of the Duke and Duchess of Braganza the previous evening.
Yes, so on the contrary to their parents, the Duke and Duchess, who held like a very formal banquet in one of our royal palaces as well on the evening of their wedding ceremony, the Infanta wanted to have a more informal gathering for the royal guests and all the guests that were coming to Portugal for the wedding. So she decided to throw like I would say a popular party that all little town have in Portugal with the typical food, with the music, with these traditional dances and the clothes as well. And then she surprised everyone by wearing this typical costume that is typical from the north part of the country. She's dressed as a traditional bride, that surprisingly brides were black. And the tradition is that you wear all the gold of the family that has been passed for generations. In this case, I must confess that I don't know, but the typical bride of Vienna wears all the jewels of the family on the top of the black dress. It's also interesting what she's holding. Usually it is embroidered with love sentences, love quotes, and it is usually the groom that gives to the bride, or like the boyfriend to the girlfriend.
Well, that's really sweet that they continue that tradition.
Yeah, indeed. It was very surprising. I was not expecting to see her dressed like this and arriving with all the typical music and so on. It was very fun.
And just like an example of how, even though they're no longer a reigning royal family, they do still have been able to use the attention on this wedding as a way to promote traditional Portuguese culture.
Indeed, indeed. They really did an effort on that, on to highlight what Portugal has best, like the food and the traditions. So they really put an effort on that. And I think that's pretty good, as so many people arrive from outside of Portugal.
So, how far is their home from Mafra?
It's like 30, 40 minutes, right? They live in Sintra, which is pretty close to Lisbon as well. They have a very nice house with a little garden and park and so on. And I also must say that it was pretty surprising that they decided to use their own house to welcome such a number of guests, as we are speaking about more than 1,000 guests. But it was nice that they decided to do it at home. And the Infanta also told that in an interview that she was very happy to welcome all her loved ones in her home on the place where she grown up and so on. So,
you know, that's just like a really kind of intimate touch, and in that
Indeed, you have 1,000 people at home, but it is still kind of intimate and private.
Exactly. It reminds me of actually one of the weddings in my family where we had around, it was 800, so not 1,000 at the time, but we had them in our, we had a huge backyard at the time, and there were a huge tent set up, and it was full of people, but it must have been quite nerve-wracking for them to kind of organize everything and then continue still living in the house.
Yeah. Well, they had help. They had like a team helping organize all the party and the ceremony. So it was stressful, but when you have someone who is taking care of everything, I think you can just relax a bit more. And she told on interviews that she was relaxed. She was not feeling nervous. So I think everything went pretty okay.
Yeah, no, I think throughout the entire weekend, both of them looked very relaxed and happy, and there was no kind of hint of they might be tense about anything. They just seemed to be having the time of their life.
Yeah, indeed. And she also said that they only had one rehearsal of the ceremony. So they were not really, it was just a very, very chill.
Yeah, no, it seemed, I think, because we've been seeing quite a lot of weddings this year, this one seemed definitely to be one that was very fun to kind of cover and also probably quite fun to attend.
Yes, indeed.
So let's move on to the next morning when the Infanta and her father arrived in Mafra in a carriage.
Duke and the Infanta were waiting on Mafra City Hall to leave on the carriage and do like a small ride until church. They were waiting for all the guests to arrive. I must say that besides all the royals that attended, the president of the Portuguese Republic was there as well. He has a very good relation with the family. And the president of Timor was also present. Timor is a very dear country to the Duke and to the Infanta as well, as she also got engaged in Timor. So we had kind of mix of republic and monarchy. And it's like an example that it is pretty well accepted in our country, like comparing with other European countries who had a monarchy and like try to erase and ignore that past. Here in Portugal, it is pretty accepted, and there are no tense situations between the Republican government and like the royal family, the pretenders to the throne.
Yeah, I was going to say, is there a monarchy movement in Portugal, or is it just sort of accepted as part of the furniture?
yes, there is, but like it's not like an active cause, and people are like every day trying to restore the monarchy. We kind of accept, and it's a very dear family to the people, but it's not like an active movement to restore the monarchy.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a very kind of unique position to be in, because they're able to kind of undertake many of the official functions, but not necessarily have that role. So they're invited to those state banquets, and they're able to have like this massive wedding and have the president attend and have this much official recognition, but they're also able to have like much more of a private role and not have the pressures of being like a reigning royal family and all the criticism that comes with it. But I found it actually one of the things that I was thinking about, that if they had been a reigning royal family, the Duke would have probably been wearing a uniform with a much better hat than what he was wearing.
Yeah, that hat was a bit of a bone of contention with me.
The moment I sent the first screenshot to Sam, she was like, what the hell is he wearing?
I think no one was expecting to see the Duke arriving on that hat. And it was also commented on TV that why is he wearing the hat? And thank God he removed it. But yeah, it was not formal.
Your top hats are maybe probably not traditional in Portugal, but whatever the equivalent of a top hat was, that's what you wear to a wedding.
This did seem quite slightly ridiculous.
It's one of the funny things of the day. It's one of the anecdotes of the day, indeed.
Yeah.
I'm glad it wasn't just me being particular then.
And I actually, one of the questions I'm not sure you would know, but the carriage, are there any kind of traditional carriages left over in Portugal from the time of the monarchy? Or is this just one of those things they probably borrowed from someone?
I really don't know the history behind of this specific carriage, but we have a huge museum. We have one of the best collections in Europe of royal carriages. I invite everyone to go and visit. It's very impressive. And I think the last time one of the carriages was out of the museum was when Queen Elizabeth II visited Portugal. By then we had a dictator, and he really wanted to do a big thing to welcome the queen. So he took off the crown carriage. He took a very beautiful Baroque boat we have as well for the queen to arrive on the river. So it was a very spectacular thing to see. And I think that was the last time the carriages that are on the museum currently were used. This specific one, I must confess that I really don't know the history behind, but there are so many that probably it has some connection to the royal family as well.
Now, thank you for telling us about the kind of main carriages used for the Queen's state visit, because I've always seen those visuals. But I was wondering about the barge that she used, because I remember seeing this like massive gold thing. And
it's an impressive piece. And like you see that he really made an effort to. It was like a monarchy receiving another monarchy. We had the gala at the opera, the gala at the palace. We had a huge military parade, the carriages, and so on. It was like a very grand affair.
Definitely, and I think Portugal is Britain's oldest ally, so that is
indeed.
Went all out.
Indeed. And they kind of celebrated that this year, like a round big mark. I think that our president must try to go on a state visit to the UK. I think he would really appreciate it, and probably try this year. But as King Charles is still very busy, it was difficult.
Oh, probably, yeah. No, they have had quite a busy few years.
Yeah.
Hopefully, we might see a British state visit to Portugal sometime soon, and then
it will take a few years. Maybe the president will go there first. I really don't know, but I hope so.
I mean, if they do come to Portugal, at least we'll see the Braganzas again.
So, yeah,
the plus side for us. So, and then let's talk about a bit about the dress, which was initially described as being a princess cut gown. And you and I were both wondering kind of how that would manifest.
Yeah, whatever that is. So the Infanta decided for a very simple dress without embroidery. I think it really fits her, and she looked pretty good on this day.
Oh, yes. No, it was very spectacular. And I think the dress itself had enough structure and simplicity to carry off the kind of really important jewels that she wore.
Yeah, indeed.
Yeah, I think one of the...
There is a balance in there, yeah.
Yeah, so let's kind of start talking about the lesser piece, and then we'll move on to the big thing. But she borrowed a sapphire and diamond bracelet that used to belong to Queen Emily from a friend.
Yeah, so the bracelet was a gift from Queen Amelie to one of her ladies, and it was sold at auction some years ago, and a collector who also trades hearts and jewelry bought it, and as he's a friend of the Infanta, he decided to loan it to her for this occasion. So with the bracelet, she was wearing something blue, something old, and something loaned all at the same time, as the bracelet is made of sapphires and diamonds.
Takes all those boxes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then the earrings she was wearing, she said that they were worn by her mother on her wedding day, but they come from her grandmother.
Yeah, so the earrings belong to a maternal grandmother, and she gave it to a daughter, the current Duchess of Braganza, for her to wear it on her wedding. I think she must have realized that the earrings match the tiara pretty well and they make a perfect combo. So she gave it to the daughter and the Infanta decided to wear them on her wedding as well.
Yes, they are quite timeless pieces and I think Sam would tell us, but I think they might look like clips rather than wood piercings.
I was just staring at the fitting. That's so strange that you said that. No, well, I can't tell from this angle, but it could be that she does have her ears pierced and it's clipped under as opposed to having an earring back. But yeah, you know my opinion on things like this. If you're going to have enormous diamonds hanging out of your ears, it's better to be safe than sorry.
Of course.
And I think the size of these diamonds is quite special. The current Duchess of Braganza, she comes from an aristocratic background as well, doesn't she?
Yes. She's like a great granddaughter of a Viscount, and of course there are a lot of marriages. She's from a very traditional and noble aristocratic family in Portugal. Her mother also has a few fine jewelry.
Yeah, no, I think we saw some of those worn for the wedding back in 1995, and then it's obviously to give this same. And on that same subject, doesn't the groom have some kind of noble connections as well?
Well, I really don't know. I really don't know.
Because I did see some online, but it's very obscure. But he does come from a pretty good family, and he seems to be quite well accepted by the Duke and Duchess.
Yeah, they all seem like he seemed very okay with the parents-in-law and also the brothers-in-law. Like it seems they really welcome him into the family.
Which is just lovely. And then talking about the main event, which is that she wore Queen Emily's Dom Louis tiara.
Yeah, so the Infanta also confessed in an interview that she was surprised that her parents told her to use this specific tiara, as it's like the biggest and the most important one they have in the family. It was created by the Portuguese crown jewelers for Queen Amélie when she was still Princess Amélie of Orléans. And it was given to her by her father-in-law as a wedding gift. There was also a matching necklace that was given by her mother-in-law. Currently, the necklace doesn't exist anymore. I must say that it must have been converted into the choker we can see on the picture. There are a lot of people who still say that the necklace disappeared. And during the last week on TV, people were reporting that, okay, the necklace is not there anymore and so on. But according to me and to what I think, it must have been dismantled and converted to the choker that is still in the possession of the Portuguese Duke and Duchess. So the Queen Amélie, she had three children. The daughter died a few hours after she was born. Then the eldest son, together with Amélie's husband, King Charles I, they were assassinated in 1908. And then there is the youngest son, our last king, King Emmanuel II. He got married, but he didn't have children. So Queen Amélie kind of lived her last years a bit alone because she didn't have close relatives, no husband, no sons, no grandchildren. So her jewelry were kind of split and divided between her many nieces and nephews and sisters. She was announced to the Count of Paris. She was announced to the Countess of Barcelona. She was announced to the Duke of Aosta. And so the jewelry were divided. Queen Amélie was also invited to be the godmother of Infanta Maria Francisca's father, the current Duke of Braganza. I must tell that he is not a direct descendant of our last king and queen of our royal family until 1910. He came from a different branch of the Braganzas, who were exiled many years before. But as there were no direct descendants of our last king, that branch of the family was called to to serve and to be the pretender to the defunct throne. And Queen Amélie was invited to be the godmother of Don Duarte. And when she died, she kindly left him some of her jewelry, some of her properties in Portugal as well, kind of recognizing that he was the pretender to the throne. And the tiara stayed, let's say, hidden for long, as Queen Amélie died in the 1950s. And we only saw it again in 1995 when the Duchess of Braganza wore it for a wedding day.
So it's just really their biggest and most important heirloom jewel.
Yes, definitely.
And it's, I mean, the Duchess gave an interview a few years ago where she said that her children would be able to use the big jewels at times, but she expected most of them to be left to the eldest son. And the fact that this main tiara was such a big surprise, even to the Infanta, that she was able to wear mm-hmm. it on her wedding day is just an example of, when we were kind of thinking about it, this is really the only tiara that would have made sense as a bridal tiara, because all of their other tiaras are much too small or of an impractical
shape.
Yeah,
I think so. I think it would get a bit lost on all the bridal gown and the veil. I think this one is the one that is most suitable for such an important occasion in someone's life. The others would get a bit lost on the air and with all the veil and...
Yeah, and I was thinking about it, if the mirrored necklace was still around, it would have been kind of lovely to see that as like a smaller version of this tiara, to be just yeah. worn by kind of younger members of the family, where the Duchess could wear the big piece herself. Yeah.
For example, yes, it's a good idea, but unfortunately, we have no matching necklace anymore.
Yes. And for those who are seeing the video, they can see on the right-hand side is this massive emerald stomacher, which will appear in a few minutes. And it's also another kind of important heirloom jewel that we'll talk about soon enough. So you just mentioned about the basilica in Mafra. How long do you think the ceremony, I thought, was... not as long as kind of other Catholic wedding ceremonies I've covered before. And I felt that it had so much kind of movement and involvement from other guests and stuff that it seemed to pass by quite quickly.
Yeah, indeed, it passed pretty fast. The music that was chosen was very beautiful, very touching as well. There were some very beautiful moments. I would highlight one of the last moments of the ceremony when the Infanta went to the altar to place her bridal bouquet next to the Virgin. And there were also a choir singing, and they were from the south of the country. It's a typical music we have. It's called Kent. They were singing to the Virgin as well. It's one of all of the many examples we mentioned before of that they tried to bring Portuguese traditions to the ceremony and to the festivities as well. They brought this choir from the south to sing to the Virgin. That is a very traditional thing as well, and it was pretty emotional to see that, and the Infanta placing the bouquet next to the image.
Yeah, I think that was one of the most touching moments, to see that very spiritual and kind of intimate thing in the midst of this kind of magnificent cathedral and such a wide televised ceremony.
Yeah, I think for me it was the highlight of the ceremony.
Yeah, and then following the ceremony, there was a lot of guests alongside, and I think this was one of the biggest royal gatherings.
Yeah,
it was, I think, much bigger than what we even expected.
Yeah, true. Well, the Duke and Duchess, they are the Duke and Duchess of Braganza. They always attend most of the weddings that happen in Europe, as they are pretty well related with most royal families, and also with families without throne. So I was kind of expecting that we would see many royal guests, despite that it was not the heir that was marrying, it was the second daughter. But indeed, it was a very good surprise to see so many of them.
Yeah, I think it was a bit, I mean, I expected a decent turnout, but just the sheer amount of guests that we got was just And I think just kind of a brief overview of people, including the Grand Duchess Maria Vladimirovna of Russia, the Prince and Princess of Prussia, the brother of the head of the House of Habsburg. And there was Princess Miriam of Bulgaria, who's now a Jordanian princess, with her son, both of her sons. And of course, she mentioned the President of Portugal. So it was quite, from the leading royal guests, there were quite a lot, but there were a bunch of more of the minor German royalty. There were people from Bourbon Parma, the Count and Countess of Paris, Princess Gloria of Turin-Taxis. And so a nice kind of mix of the really a lot of these people whose weddings the Duke and Duchess or even the Infanta have attended in the past couple weeks.
Yeah, we must say that they are related to many royal families, to the directly related to the Austrian royal family, to the Luxembourgish royal family, the Belgian royal family, Liechtenstein's royal princely family, and so on and so on. As in the past, there were some Portuguese infantas who contracted some very bright marriages, and also the Duke of Braganza is. The Duke of Braganza's mother was the sister of the late Countess of Paris. So he's also very close to all the French Orléans royal family.
And all the people that they married. So that Italians and the Germans, the whole lot. So very well connected. And then I think one of the my favorite parts was when they walked out from the basilica and came out and to cut the cake in front of the crowds. And I just love kind of the elements because they were both so joyful in this moment, really having this public celebration.
The Infanta told that she wanted to include this part. It was her wish because she really wanted to share a bit of this day with the people, as Portuguese people were always very nice to them. And the Duchess also told on an interview many times that people would approach her on the street and ask her, how are our children? How are our kids? So they felt that as the family has like this role, unofficially, but the role, and they are public figures, and people saw them born, being baptized, going to school. She felt that it was the right decision to share a moment of all the wedding ceremony with the people. So they invited everyone to come to the basilica and to come and to see them cut the cake, and they distributed the cake after that.
Yes, and I believe through the efforts of our friend Nettie of Nettie Royal, the press were able to get the cake as well.
So, that is nice.
Yeah, and I really love this kind of public element. It's similar to what they do in Liechtenstein for their kind of main royal wedding, where they have this huge countrywide street party. Mm-hmm. And that's why they were able to not just be remote figures, but able to have people be involved as part of their happiness.
Yes, it was a very beautiful moment, yes.
So that was a beautiful gesture. And then afterwards, they had a second reception inside the palace where there was another cake. This time, guests that attended the wedding.
Yes, when guests left the basilica, they went to one of the many cloisters of the building, and there was like a reception. I also must say that I was surprised that the TV was also allowed to record that reception. But as I must say that as they were having a lot of guests, more than 1,000 guests, they had to do this reception, and then the dinner that they held at their home in Sintra was more had a more reduced guest list, and then there was a party after that for all the guests to come. So I think the reception was a good idea to gather all the guests that were at the ceremony, as they were not able to receive all of them for dinner at their home after this. They also did a pretty similar thing when the Duke and Duchess got married more than 25 years ago.
Yeah, I was very surprised that the television cameras were allowed in, and the fact that they were able to record again all the intimate moments
mm-hmm.
for quite a long amount of time was really like a nice way of having even more people involved in their day. Yeah.
Television was also allowed to interview the bride and the groom, the Duke and the Duchess of Braganza. They also spoke with Princess Maria of Liechtenstein, who is the Infanta's godmother. The Duchess of Caraval also said a few words. So it was a very interesting part to watch on television and see them hanging out, and it was pretty interesting.
And I think one of the most anticipated parts of this wedding, we were thinking that this is going to be such a big royal event. What's kind of going to be the dress code? And we were unsure. There were two kind of receptions being held by the Duke and Duchess. And that evening reception that did give us quite a lot to talk about.
Yeah, indeed, surprisingly, all people had time to change to black tie. The press reported that there was a delay. Dinner was supposed to start at 9 and it ended up being served at 11, as like all the people had to go from the church to their hotels to change and then to go to Sintra for the dinner. The logistics were a bit complicated, but in the end I think they all had fun, and it seemed pretty beautifully set, like the table and the decorations of the table and all the tent and the flowers and so on.
Yeah, yes. It's not your typical royal banquet, is it?
Yeah, it's not that typical. Yeah, we were probably, some people were expecting a palace with a large dining room decorated with all the family silver and so on. It was a bit different, but it ended up pretty all right.
Mm.
Yes, I really like kind of the touch they had of having all these royals and stuff. And it was seemed quite formal, but it was done in a very kind of modern and refreshing way, where it didn't seem staid in that sense. And I think before we talk about the bride and groom, I would like to say I did like the Duchess's outfit in the for the wedding ceremony, but I did expect her to wear kind of a better gown and maybe more jewels for the gala.
Yes, I was also expecting to see some more jewels, like the family's aquamarines or one of her diamond necklaces. But maybe because she had a lot to supervise, she didn't have much time to change her hair, and so she decided to go for a more simple
outfit. Look, yeah. And I think this is one that she's worn a few times before, so it is a repeat.
I don't know, probably.
Yeah, and I mean, she did have their long, big diamond earrings on and a pearl and diamond brooch, so it wasn't all kind of that bad, but still a lot less than what she usually wears, which, like, she wears diamond necklaces for daytime weddings.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, true. I was expecting a bit more, as she was marrying a daughter, but
maybe she's saving the big jewels for the son.
Yeah, well, if they did all of this for the Infanta, I'm expecting a much grander ceremony with much more guests, royal guests, and more glitter, more bling for the heir's wedding.
Yeah, and I really liked, so in the past few months, we've seen the Infanta and her fiancé at quite a lot of German royal weddings. And we saw two of them sitting beside the bridal couple, Prince Ludwig and Princess Sophie of Bavaria. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was a really nice touch to kind of have, because we're not necessarily sure how close they were, but this seems like they must be pretty good friends.
Mm-hmm. I think they organized the tables pretty well, like a younger generation on the larger table, and then the Duke and the Duchess presiding other tables with more older guests that they really are in touch with, and they have topics to chat. I think it was a good idea not to have like a presidential table with all the senior members of the royal families present.
Yeah, it did seem, again, like we're talking about, it was much more kind of informal than royal banquet, but they did have royal guests, and it was done in a pretty kind of refreshing way.
Yeah, indeed. It was a family thing, a family affair, like they mentioned several times on interviews they made throughout the week.
Yeah, and then the Infanta wore some very interesting jewels for the evening.
Yes, indeed. That was the surprise of the evening. Let's start for the to speak about earrings, and I think it is simpler. The earrings, they were previously all diamonds. They were set with diamonds, but apparently one of the diamonds were removed and were used on the engagement ring that Eduard offered to Francisca. So there was a missing. There was a hole. And that diamond was replaced by an emerald, and they did the same on the other earring, of course. And I must assume that they were given to the infant as a wedding gift, like a joint gift from the parents, and then the groom who supplied the emeralds. And then on the back of her hair, she was using an old family heirloom jewel. I think it is one of the oldest pieces they have on their collection. I'm still doing some research about the origins. It is apparently an old heirloom from the Brazilian imperial family. It is a large stomacher set with diamonds and emeralds. The Infanta is not wearing the biggest version of it, as there is a portion that you can remove, and it was removed for this occasion. We can find many pictures of the Infanta's grandmother, Princess Maria Francisca, as well, wearing the stomacher with a pair of matching earrings for all the royal gatherings they attended in the 60s, like King Juan Carlos and Queen Sophia's wedding, King Constantine and Queen Anne Marie's wedding, all those family weddings in Germany, and so on. It was like she wore it very, very often, but then after her death, it was inherited by her son, and it was not seen in, at least in public, worn by a Duchess of Braganza until this year, when the Duchess wore it for the Bavarian royal wedding. It was a very, very good surprise to see such an important piece finally. It has been loaned for an exhibition in the past, more than 20 years ago, and that was the only record we had of the jewel. And then it was kind of stored for all those years. So it was a very, very good surprise to see it first on the Bavarian royal weddings, and now adorning the heir of the Infanta for the ceremony. As it was not a tiara event, we still had an important heirloom on her hair to appreciate.
Yes, and I think even more than the tiara, this one is a much more important jewel for her to wear, and that's why it makes it quite unexpected that she'd be loaned something so significant.
Yeah, indeed. She was loaned a tiara for the ceremony, and then this massive brooch for the dinner, which was a nice gesture from their parents.
Yeah, and I find it, I mean, we do see in kind of other royal families, they're very set about their kind of jewel sharing, and there are some tiaras reserved for certain members of families, and they will never really be shared in that sense. And to see stuff like this being shared around and done in a very kind of, it's a gesture of how good the family relationship is and how they don't really take the source of rules.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They are not that strict. The rules are, you can forget the rules for such an important occasion.
Yeah, and it reminds me a bit of how Queen Sofia of Spain loaned Infanta Cristina the Joyas de Pizarro earrings. And how those are reserved for a queen.
Yeah, but it is such an important and spectacular occasion that I think you can skip the rules for a moment.
Definitely. And it's very touching. And in terms of other jewels, the wedding was fairly kind of lacking of important jewels, except at the wedding reception when we got kind of two fairly significant royal heirlooms.
Yeah. I don't know if you want me to start speaking about them.
You can start. Go ahead.
Yeah. So on the left we have Princess Anna Cecilia of Bourbon to Sicily's, and she's wearing a beautiful diamond and ruby set. This set belonged to her grandmother, to her maternal grandmother, who was Princess Anne of Orléans, and she married her first cousin, the Duke of Aosta. This ruby set appeared, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, during the 1950s, 1960s. It looks very modern as well. So it must be an acquisition of Princess Anne.
Yes.
It was also loaned to her daughter, to her youngest daughter, Princess Maria Cristina of Savoy-Aosta. She wore it for the wedding of King Baudouin with Queen Fabiola of the Belgians. And now we can finally appreciate it in color and with a picture of good quality on adorning the Princess Anne's granddaughter with Princess Anna Cecilia. It was a very good surprise, and the set is pretty impressive.
Of course. And I think one of the best parts for me was the fact that I finally confirmed that they were rubies. Because I've seen it and I've had people fight with me because I believe in the article that they were sapphires or they were emeralds, but no, they're rubies.
Yeah, we had the rumors that they were rubies, and then I believe share with you that I found a picture of Princess Anna Cecilia also wearing just earrings, so we knew they were rubies, but now we have the full proof and we can admire the full set.
Yeah, it is quite spectacular. And I think one thing more to add is that Princess Anne, Duchess of Aosta, was the niece of Queen Emily.
Yes
and maybe the timing was because she started wearing the 50s, so it might have something to do with kind of a legacy that Queen Emily may have left her jewels or money that she would have bought a necklace at that time, and that might be like a link that her granddaughter
it could be.
Yes, we'll have to kind of investigate that a bit more.
So on the right we have Princess Sibylla of Luxembourg. Princess Sibylla was not born a royal, although she is a great granddaughter of King Alfonso XIII of Spain and Queen Victoria Eugenie. Her mother is Princess Olympia Torlonia. And this family is the owner of the splendid aquamarine Perrur that belonged to Queen Victoria Eugenie. It was changed in the 1930s. It has a different look nowadays. And for this occasion, for this banquet, Princess Sibylla wore her grandmother's aquamarine earrings. And as she has that beautiful manton covering her dress, we don't know if she wore a necklace as well. She also wore a very magnificent diamond bracelet. Not easy to identify, but I believe it is one of grandmother's diamond bracelet as well of Infanta Beatriz of Spain.
Yes, she does have quite a spectacular jewelry collection, and we do see some of the pieces quite frequently, like a ruby necklace and stuff, but it's special to see the worn again.
Yeah, it is sad that she's not seen more often in Luxembourg on state banquets and so on, as she has, and her mother has such an amazing collection that we are not able to see as they keep a very low profile.
Yes, and we generally only see them at foreign royal events. But I hope that this is one of those pieces that she will eventually inherit and kind of use for more royal events.
Let's hope they, when King Felipe and Queen Letizia go to Luxembourg on a state visit, that they would invite Princess Sibylla and Prince Guillaume as well, and she would wear, of course, Queen Ina's treasured aquamarines.
Yes,
I think it is the best occasion to showcase them.
Oh, definitely. And at the same time, now that we've kind of discussed everything, what were your thoughts on this entire wedding, and how did it kind of differ from what your expectations were?
Yeah, so I was expecting a much smaller affair. I was pretty surprised that it was such a big thing. I was thinking they would save this for the year. The ceremony was very beautiful. The bride and groom, they looked very happy, really happy. They had a light. They were very chilled as well. So I think the environment was very good, and it was so nice that they allowed television to get in and to allow us to accompany them throughout the day, throughout the festivities. It was very nice. Usually from not non-reigning monarchies, we have like a few photos taken by photographers for magazine exclusives and so on. And I was very happy that we had the opportunity to see everything.
Yeah, I think it was amazing. And the fact that we'll talk in a few weeks with Seth, who was able to represent the Royal Watcher at the as part of the press, the media attention around this wedding and the way it was handled was just really a master class in PR and how to handle these things very well.
Yeah, I also must say that it was the most seen program of the day on Portuguese television. There was a moment where there were more than 1 million people seeing. That was the arrival of the bride.
Oh, wow.
So I think they kind of managed to get the people's attention, Portuguese people's attention.
And just seeing the level of kind of attention on this wedding and how grand was, it makes me really excited for what we'll see in the future for both of her brothers.
Yeah, I think it is very high now, the expectations for what is going to happen after. I'm expecting a very grand affair, and let's hope they still do it on the Basilica. That I think it was a perfect choice. It is a very beautiful place to get married. Yeah, and the expectations are pretty high.
Of course. No, definitely. Thank you so much for joining us today. Where can people find you on social media?
Yeah, thank you guys for inviting me. So you can find me on Instagram. My name there is Spanish Royal Jewels. I mainly write about the Bourbon family, their jewels, and some family history as well. And you can also find me on the Royal Watcher when Saad needs me to write some articles for him as well.
Yes, no, definitely you are my go-to for anything, not just even in Spain and Portugal, but in quite a lot of other European countries. And I love kind of our discussions and how we kind of go into very different tangents of all sorts of things. So thank you so much for joining us, and
Thank you,
hopefully
guys.
speak to you again soon.